punishment and should be dismissed. This after former Vice President Atiku Abubakar, the presidential candidate for the main opposition People's Democratic Party, or PDP, petitioned a court to order the release of Tinubu's documents. The school had refused to release the document to Abubakar, saying it did not see the relevance of the certificate in the former Vice President's challenge of Tinubu's victory in the last presidential election. This prompted the former Vice President to seek legal redress to compel the university to release the academic files. Abubakar argues that the documents will settle the controversy surrounding the President's academic qualifications and help with his election challenge back home. The former Vice President alleges that the last presidential election was fraught with irregularities and rigging. Tinubu's academic qualifications show that he graduated from Chicago State University with a bachelor's degree in business administration, accounting and management in 1979. Frank Shaibu is the special assistant on public communication to former Vice President Atiku Abubakar. He talks to me about what he says is the relevance of Tinubu's academic records in the U.S. to the election petition.
His recovery is very relevant in all aspects, relevant in all fields, because as far as we are concerned, his records are public documents. And because these are public documents, the president of our country cannot be such a character who would parade a fake certificate, because it will represent a dent on our democracy. And it will suffer what I call a deficit internationally.
Well, he denies that the former vice president petition has anything to do with the election petition in Nigeria. But my question is, how has the conduct of the last presidential election in Nigeria affected public confidence in electoral processes in Nigeria from your perspective?
It has a lot affected public confidence. More so that Nigerians know that the election was stolen, that who was declared, the man who was declared as their president was not the one they voted for. So it has eroded public confidence, you know, and the Nigerian judiciary has a historic opportunity before them at the elections petition trial, you know, because they have been called out many times because of so many controversial judgments in the past. And this case provides a historic opportunity that will determine whether Nigeria will swim or sink. It is not about Atiku Abubakar being president of Nigeria. It's about the most populous black nation in the world. Because illegitimacy plus illegality will produce what you call pluralistic illegalism. And that will not, such a character will not be respected world over, you know. So the judgment, the matter before the judiciary, before the two justices of our judiciary, you know, is historic. And the evidence before them is overwhelming. So Nigerians expect them to do the right thing, because the judgment will reset Nigeria. Nigerians will have a breather of life both at home and abroad. And it will be something that will inspire Nigerians, both those who are abroad to return home to come and invest, you know, and those at home to know that, look, they have an opportunity to be proud of their own country.
On social media platforms, there are several memes with people saying all eyes on the judiciary in Nigeria. But what are the chances that the election petition court in Nigeria would see the outcome of the election in the light of what some people are saying, voter irregularities and rigging?
Well, the truth is, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Yes. You see, the truth is this. With the evidence before the elections petition tribunal, and with the esteemed justices of the court, knowing full well that they have a historic opportunity, you know, to place their name, you know, in the science of time. They know that if you juxtapose that opportunity they have with the evidence before them in the public space, they know too well that the only option they have is for justice not to just be done, but to be seen to be done. And there are no fears at all, because we believe that justice will be served in this matter.
Frank Shaibu is the special assistant on public communication to former Vice President Atiku Abubakar. He spoke with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. Still in Nigeria, a prominent member of the Nigeria Bar Association says President Bola Tinubu violated the constitution with the first ministerial list he presented to the Senate for confirmation. Attorney Kunle Erden contends that the president failed to meet the requirement by submitting a list comprising 28 names instead of the required 37 names. He also asked that the Senate should not have vetted the ministers due to what he says was an illegal act. His remarks come after he filed a petition at a high court in the capital, Abuja, seeking redress. The constitution requires the president to have at least 37 ministers designate, each representing one of the 36 states, as well as one representing the federal capital, Abuja. Legal analysts say complying with the provisions of the constitution should have been respected by the president because he swore an oath to protect the document. President Tinubu recently swore in his cabinet ministers, but critics say the lack of respect for the rule of law undermines democracy. Kunle Erden tells me the violation of the constitution is a cause for concern to all Nigerians. Court now. All right, so Barrister Kunle, we understand that you and a colleague have filed a petition.
What we are saying by way of the action we filed in court at the Federal High Court here in Abuja is just a restatement of what is already stated in the Constitution of Nigeria, that upon the inauguration of the president and swearing to an oath of office, 60 days thereafter, he must transmit to the Senate of the National Assembly his list of ministerial nominees. And also, the same constitution also makes provision that every state in Nigeria, as a matter of fact, we have 36 states in Nigeria and the Federal Capital Territory, which is also defined to be a state. And the constitution provides that every state in Nigeria, including the Federal Capital Territory, must have a person representing the state in the cabinet of the president. That is, an entity of the state, at least one person, entity of the state, must represent the state in the cabinet of the president. In that way, we are talking about 37, minimum 37 nominees who would not represent the 36 states and the Federal Capital Territory, Abuja.
Kunle, are you saying that the Senate itself abetted in this illegality?
Obviously, of course, the Senate could accept the list, but not have acted on it. Because at the stage where the 60 days had already expired, there was nothing the Senate could have done. Or the Senate ought not have acted on it. Immediately, the 60 days expired, and the names submitted were not up to 37, or minimum 37. The Senate ought to have stopped acting on it. But rather they proceeded, and after the 60 days, the Senate was even justifying this operation by saying that the president has promised that he will send another list outside the 60 days, which actually impeded, and they acted on it outside the 60 days. So let us ask ourselves, why then did the fifth operation come in? So in essence, the whole essence of the fifth operation has been defeated. And by the way, do you know that many of the state governors also follow suit? Many of them did not even submit list of their commissioners. So they asked to the various houses of assembly.
Are you therefore saying that the lack of respect or upholding the statute as expressly stated in the constitution could bring chaos and could create a crisis, so to speak, if things are not done according to the constitution?
Very well. Now, we are now back to the situation we were when Buhari ruled the country without ministers for more than 6 months or 7 months thereabouts. We are not back to that same situation. Because what is the difference? In a sense, what could happen tomorrow is that probably in 4 years or 8 years, I don't know how it's going to be, a new president comes in and he will say, okay, Tinubu submitted 27 names, if I'm right, the first list 27. Another president can say, okay, let me submit 10 names, let me submit 5 names. Then after that, I will submit 20 names, after the 60 days. They see all the same thing. Disrespect of the Constitution. The Constitution expects, what the Constitution expects is that you submit at least, since the Antarctic State and the SCC Abuja, you submit at least 37 names of your ministerial nominees to the Senate of the National Assembly. That is the minimum. You could actually there's a provision here that actually provides that the president can actually submit further names. Of course, he has that right. But you and I know very well that it's not issue of the number of ministers. You can actually have 37 ministers, but must all of them be given portfolio? We are talking about a country that is going down. We have Nigeria is suffering economically, but the cost of governance is still very, very high. For crying out loud, where are we going?
So Kunle, my question to you is, what are the prospects of success of this petition to the court, and when do you think the court can adjudicate this? Because the ministers have been sworn in, and it appears life still goes on.
That is the pitiable situation where we find ourselves in this country. Many Nigerians, even scholars, they know very well that what Mr. President did is wrong. But if you check it out, most people are not really bothered. And I always say that by the time we don't respect the rule of law, it will come crashing on us one day.
Attorney Kunle Idah is a prominent member of the Nigeria Bar Association. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. The Gender Center for Empowering Development, or GENCED, has petitioned the Economic Community of West African State, or ECOWAS, to consider the impact its decision would have on women and children in Niger. The NGO advocacy group for children and women say military interventions, including wars and coups, have harmed women and children who, it says, are marginalized in many parts of the world, including Africa. The remarks come after the regional bloc rejected the three-year transitional period the military junta in Niger proposed to return the country to constitutional rule. ECOWAS has denounced the coup and has appointed former Nigerian leader General Abdul Salami Abubakar to lead its mediation effort to resolve the Niger crisis following the overthrow of Mohamed Bazoum. Esther Tayuya is the executive director of GENCED. She tells me that her organization will continue to engage with ECOWAS to ensure its decisions about Niger as well as future crisis resolutions do not endanger women and children.
There are layers of humanitarian crisis that this could bring along. Niger and the other Sahel area, which this coup has been going on, Mali, Burkina Faso, are all high in issues about gender-based violence, early marriage, female genital mutilation. These issues are very high in these areas. Now, the moment there's a military takeover, constitutions are suspended, laws are suspended, everything in the country really does not work because the police is not really functioning as they ought to function. So who do these people report to? But you see, most of the coups that has happened, the response from ECOWAS has always been restoring of democratic principles, which is very important. But we think that ECOWAS have to go beyond that and begin to also look at some of the humanitarian crisis that comes about.
ECOWAS impose sanctions. Do you think that the sanctions negatively impact women and children more than the military junta?
Yeah, it will negatively impact women because, you see, we live in a society now where everything is integrated and we are like a village within a village, you know. So Ghanaians go to Niger to buy their onions and other commodities. Nigerians also come to Ghana for things. Go to Nigeria, go to Burkina Faso, go to Mali. Now, here is a case where the sanctions being placed on them, both road, land, and air is being closed. And so at the border, a lot of trucks that have loaded onions to neighboring countries are stuck over there. And these women who trade are losing millions of dollars from this sanction. So what then implies is that these women who are already vulnerable and trying as much as they can to do something for themselves are going to lose a huge money.
Is there any plan that your organization with other similar organizations that have interest of women and children at heart to meet some of the organs of ECOWAS to push forward your request for them to consider some of these issues you raised before imposing some of these restrictions when a legitimately elected government is overthrown, which attract the sanctions of ECOWAS?
Yeah, thank you. As a matter of fact, we've actually presented our petition to ECOWAS, and they've actually acknowledged our concerns and have assured us that they will further engage us on the way forward and how to go about the process and everything. So that's the very welcoming thing from ECOWAS, saying that we are ready for dialogue. We always want to do things better in the region. We can't say we know it all. You are also part of the stakeholders. So for me, that's a very good step. So when we send it to them, they quickly acknowledge and send back to us. So we are in communication with them. And we want to expand the conversation. We don't want to kind of have it only with ECOWAS, but also across board, even with the UN and the other organs. Because you see, when it happens, yes, we want to restore, but there are a lot of things, because the region that we find ourselves is embedded with so many problems. So it's like we are solving one problem, and then at the end of the day, we incur thousands of problems again. If you go to Liberia and you do a critical study, you realize that the civil war, not only did it end and democracy was restored, but it also had left so many social issues that today they are still battling with.
Esther Tyria is the executive director for GenSec. She spoke with me from the Ghanaian capital, Accra. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, in Uganda, a founding member of the opposition party Forum for Democratic Change, or FDC, is expressing concern about the challenges facing the group. Professor Maurice Ogenga Latigo, a former leader of the opposition in parliament, blames the leadership for the party's rules. Local media reports of tension in the opposition party following demands by some members for the resignation of the leader and the general secretary. The members accused Patrick Oboy Amuriat and Nandala Mafabi of failing to properly account for funds since the last elections in 2021. Both reject the allegations. Supporters say the public dispute, if not immediately resolved, would cripple and subsequently splinter the party. Maurice Ogenga Latigo tells me that the lack of unity could derail the core aims of the FDC, which he says is to change politics in Uganda for the better.
The FDC as a national party is now in very turbulent waters. And the reason basically is because of the challenge that the party has had in terms of leadership since we first formed the party in 2005. There have been too much internal bickering, too much focus on who should be what within the party instead of putting hands together to move the party and use the party for what we thought it would be, to change the politics of Uganda and provide new direction for the country. So what you are seeing are actually personal squabbles. FDC is a party, the principles upon which it was formed, of looking at the country and saying one Uganda, one people, that principle still remains. FDC, as it was formed with the party platform that dealt with all issues related to agriculture, human resource development, the public service, local government, are basically intact. But the challenge is leadership.
So who is to blame for what is currently ongoing now? Because it appears that the founding father, Dr. Kizza Besigye, is in sharp disagreement with the current leadership, the president of the party, and the general secretary of the party. So there appears to be two dividing teams within the FDC. A house divided among itself cannot stand, says the scripture. Yes. What say you?
You know, the two people to blame, they are not three, they are actually two. That is Dr. Besigye, as the founding president of FDC, and Nandala Mafabi, who was one of his closest confidants from the formation of the party. Because the two of them used their positions in party not to bring every leader to participate, but they used it to fight. Many of us, the reason why I'm no longer active. As leader of opposition, people respected the things I was doing. The international community respected what I was doing. But my party leaders saw it as a threat. I have no interest in the presidency, but I have a big interest to serve the country. After that, General Muntu was fought when they brought in Engineer Amuriat. Engineer Amuriat did not want to become party president, replacing General Muntu on his own accord. He was brought in by Nandala and Dr. Besigye. Now that the sober minds are out of the party, these guys have remained there in the arena, and that is the fight between them is what is shaking FDC for the moment.
Do you see any healing process to bring the party together, or are we going to see splinter groups basically obliterating the FDC as Ugandans know it?
What you would see in many of the events, the recent events that took place, what you would see are these old tired Ugandans quarreling amongst themselves, but the massive group of people who have gone there because they believe in FDC are young people. And Uganda is a very young country. Yes, the young people are disappointed. They want to be led by elders. But when the elders cannot do it like we do in Africa, these elders will be put aside. And in that process, an opportunity to renew FDC will take place. I was invited for a meeting that I should have been in as a founding member to try and find a way forward. Unfortunately, I had a court case in my home area and I traveled up country. I await the outcome of that meeting, and some of us who have no interest in power, but we have a responsibility to our country and we love Uganda, we love its people, we will put our hands together and see how to salvage FDC from the hands of these selfish individuals and move the party forward.
Professor Maurice Ogenga-Latigo is a founding member of Uganda's Opposition Forum for Democratic Change, or FDC. Talk with me from the capital, Kampala. Mozambique's defense ministry says the armed forces have killed the alleged leader of an Islamic State-linked insurgency concentrated in the gas-rich northern Cabo Delgado province. According to Reuters, Bonamadi Machude Omar, also known as Abu Sulaifa Muhammad and Ibn Omar, was killed along with two associates. Mozambique's President Philippe Nyusi said on Friday that Omar had been killed on Tuesday. The U.S. State Department says Omar was the head of the military and external affairs department of the ISIS Mozambique group. He was also responsible for attacks in Cabo Delgado in the town of Palma in March 2021. Those assaults led the French company Total Energies to close a liquefied natural gas project worth about $20 billion. The insurgency, which has been raging since 2017, has claimed thousands of lives. Right now, it's time for music from our African collection.
Don't come out. Don't go.
That was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Douglas Impuga, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, remember Pepe has a beautiful face but an ugly temper. I'm your host, Peter Clotet, in Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa.